and welcome to How to Be Successful with me, Vicky Paul. I'm an intuitive, artist, energy healer and author, and I'm on a mission to help you live with more joy, purpose and meaning. How to Be Successful is a straight-talking, heartfelt and enlightening podcast full of soul-centered wisdom, home truths, life-changing insights and free-flowing conversations with some of the most inspiring, knowledgeable and honest voices in well-being, spirituality, self-love and personal development. It's a show for people who are no longer satisfied chasing society's version of success because they're ready to embrace their gifts and thrive on their own terms. Hello and welcome to episode 2. Today I am chatting with George Lizos, a spiritual teacher, an intuitive healer, and he is passionate about helping lightworkers to follow their purpose of creating positive change in the world. He's the number one best-selling author of Lightworkers Gotta Work and Be the Guru. He's the creator of the Intuition Mastery School. He also hosts a fabulous podcast called the Lit Up Lightworker Podcast and has recently released a brand new book called Protect Your Light that offers a comprehensive system of clearing, shielding and strengthening your energy. This was such a great conversation. He has got so much wisdom and information to share. So if you are interested in learning more about your purpose, about how to tap into your purpose, about the different areas in your life that can point you towards your purpose, then I suggest that you spend the next 45 minutes or so delving into what he has to share. We also talk about nostalgia and how that connects us with our past lives and how our past lives are really signposts in this life about what we came here to do. I must say before I dive in that we do touch on suicide in this episode, and I've put in the show notes just the sort of time frame that we talk about that. So obviously I appreciate that that is a very sensitive subject. So if this is something that you want to avoid, then check out the show notes. It's just in the early part within the first 5 minutes of our conversation. But before I spoke to George about all the many gifts and talents that he has to share, I wanted to ask him what a lightworker is.
So in my book, Lightworkers Gotta Work, I define a lightworker as old, mature soul who choose to incarnate on the planet over and over again for the purpose of making the world a better place. So anyone who has a strong desire to improve the state of the world, to make this a more loving, a more peaceful world, can be considered a lightworker. Now, this is how Rebecca Campbell and many other spiritual teachers have defined a lightworker. Now, in Lightworkers Gotta Work, what I did, I took it a step further by defining the term ascension lightworkers, who are lightworkers whose purpose goes beyond the personal sphere into the global sphere. So they've always felt from a very young age that I am here to create change in the world. It's not just about my purpose, it's about the whole world and creating this rising of the consciousness.
Which, to be honest, when I hear you describe it like that, I say, well, we're all lightworkers.
Yes, there you go.
What we're here to do.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So you help lightworkers and empaths and people who feel they are here for some global purpose, something other than the material nitty-gritty that we get ourselves stuck in. Why is it people don't feel they are connected with their purpose?
That's a very good question, the million-pound question, because we're born knowing our life purpose, we're born knowing our connectedness to source, we're born trusting that we have all it takes to follow and fulfill that purpose, but then we get disconnected. Nobody teaches us how to create and maintain our connection with source. Now, we are born knowing it and we are already connected, but we eventually, if we don't have someone guiding us to keep that connection on, we eventually disconnect from that because nobody teaches us to trust our intuition or to listen to our heart. Instead, we're taught stereotypical formulas for success that gradually distance us from the wisdom of our soul, and therefore we live these disconnected lives, living other people's lives essentially, thinking other people's thoughts, feeling other people's emotions, which prevent us from knowing our purpose. And therefore, every single person I've met who's not on their purpose, which is the majority sadly of the world, they have this sense of, okay, what am I here to do? How am I here to serve? What is my purpose? What is my mission in the world?
And I guess that's why so many people have this sense of knowing that they can't articulate, but they're just like, there's got to be something more. You know, what is this all about?
Yes.
Now, you have such a fascinating story, and I would love you to share as much or as little of it as you feel comfortable doing.
I feel my story applies to so many people because it's a framework that especially many light workers and spiritual people in general have faced. So my story goes back to here where I am right now in Cyprus, which is a small community, a small island in the Mediterranean. And the reason I mention that is because when it comes to small communities, there tends to be a lot of judgment. There tends to be a lot of expectation to be a certain way. So growing up, I was always different. I was a kind of kid that liked to spend time by myself out in nature, staring up at the sky, asking life's big questions. I was that kind of weird kid, which again, I feel many lightworkers identify with. So from a very young age, I felt like I was different and I stood out from other kids my age, which created this sense of I need to change myself to fit into other people's expectations, to change myself to find acceptance and love and support. So that's what I learned to do. I learned to change myself, to adapt to other people's expectations. So by the age of 13 years old, that's when I realized that I was gay. Now, at the time, homosexuality was considered to be a taboo in Cyprus. Gay people were considered to be criminals and pedophiles. It had recently been legalized. So it was not a label I knew, first of all, and it wasn't a label that I could take on easily because of all the judgment that I could hear people use when they talked about that. So when I realized that, I refused to accept it and I decided to change myself from gay to straight one step at a time because that's what I learned to do. Change yourself to make people happy. People please, essentially. So 2 years of self-masochism later of trying to monitor the way I walked, the way I talked, the way I behaved, the way I thought, who I fantasized with, I reached a very low psychological point. I basically walked in a robotic way. I spoke in a robotic way because I was so scared of seeming or sounding a certain way. And then when I couldn't do it, I just reached a very low point and I decided, you know what? What is the point of living? I'm just gonna take my life, make everyone a favor, take myself out of the picture. I'm not gonna make it in the world, so why continue? And it was in that dark moment that I had this epiphany that saved me. And this epiphany that I needn't had to wait that long for. I could have had it earlier. And that's the point that I'm gonna share a little bit. That epiphany was, fuck what people think, fuck what society says, fuck what the church thinks, and just learn to love and accept yourself exactly as you are.
Amen.
And yes. And you know what, Vicky? I had no idea how to love myself or accept myself. Yes, because all I experienced was changing myself, self-loathing and self-judgment from other people and myself, because I was bullied a lot as well.
Do you not think, I mean, that just shows what amazing strength you have. And there will be people listening to this that will have similar experiences. To be in such a dark place and to have spent 2 years trying to completely turn yourself inside out and be the reverse, the exact opposite, that everything that flows naturally to you to be, it must have been in and of itself, I cannot imagine what that would have been like. At the age of 15, which is still young and vulnerable, particularly if you've spent 2 years trying to reverse engineer the very essence of who you are, to then find the strength to do that. What did that feel like? Can you remember?
Yes. So that change, that epiphany, there is a spiritual explanation behind it. Because when we try to change something that is, something that's natural to us, we're resisting it. And I feel so many people are resisting who they are in many different other ways. So what happened in that moment of surrender, when I had those pills in my hands and I had written a letter to my parents and I was ready to put an end to it, I surrendered that resistance. And the solution that was always available to me finally became visible to me so I could see it and receive it. Because it was always there, the choice to accept myself, but I was resisting it. As soon as I surrendered, there was a choice and I'm like, you know what? Now I can see it and now I can learn and teach myself how to love and accept myself. Which brought me to when I wrote my first book, Be the Guru, it was essentially my journey to finding that point and becoming my own master, my own spiritual teacher, my own empower, my own lover, my own acceptor, was that we don't need to reach such a low psychological state to find epiphanies or to find guidance or to find fulfillment. Because I feel that we romanticize the hero's journey that many spiritual teachers go through.
Yes.
Because everyone has one. And I mean, fair enough if it's your authentic story. But you, some people feel like, oh, how can I be a spiritual teacher, or how can I be an intuitive, or whatever it is, if I hadn't been through hell? Like, you don't need to go through hell. You can make a choice right now whenever you feel a sense of fear. And by fear, I use fear as a term to encompass all negative emotions, and therefore all emotions that are not you. When you see that, first of all, don't repress them, because they're part of your human experience, but be inquisitive about them. First of all, I want to blanket this by saying that all emotions are valuable emotions. There are no positive or negative emotions. I just use these terms in a subjective way so that people can understand what I mean. When I talk about positive emotions, I mean about high vibe emotions. When I speak about negative emotions, I mean like low vibe or low frequency emotions. We are meant to experience all emotions. However, the truth is that our authentic nature, meaning our spirituality, so the essence of who we are, is made up of the high vibe emotions of love, happiness, joy, excitement. So any emotion that is not into that high vibration, that means there is a disconnection between who we really are with who we feel we are in this moment. However, the aim is not to eliminate negative emotions. The aim is to feel those emotions and transmute them. So the journey is what important, not sticking to a specific positive emotion. Again, we over-spiritualize a lot in the spiritual community by like brushing through all our negative emotions and just constantly trying to be at a high that may not be possible or is healthy. And therefore what we're doing is we're repressing. So the journey is, whenever we feel any low vibe negative emotion within us, what we can do is, first of all, realize, okay, I'm having an emotion of disconnection right now from who I really am. Let's explore it and see what's behind it. So by being curious about the negative emotion, by being inquisitive about it, by understanding it, then we're given the opportunity to take that and transmute it into something more positive and therefore return home. So the aim here is not to repress the emotion, is to go through the emotion, to feel the emotion, and to allow it to change into something that we truly are. If we keep repressing it, we're gonna end up in a dark night of the soul, like I did for 2 years. I suppressed, until eventually I let go and I could see the answer that was already there. I could see small answers if I had the choice to do that. If I chose to do that, I could have received those small answers and allowed myself to go through this transformational change in an easier way.
I love that. And I think that is going to resonate with so many people, because all of us have been guilty or are guilty of ignoring all the stuff that's challenging. We don't want to go there. We're always trying to be happy, find joy, fill our lives with things that make us feel good. And if we can't find that internally, then we won't find it externally. I love the way you've phrased the positive and negative emotions to be high vibe and low vibe. And I absolutely agree with you. Seemingly, from an outsider's point of view, everything's got to be high and up and everyone's really happy. And it's, but in actual fact, it's not. You know, it's absolutely both aspects. And the more challenging lower vibe aspects are really about helping us understand who we are and where we're going. So I would imagine play such an integral part of understanding and then following your purpose and path.
100%. So finding your purpose, first of all, in Lightworkers Gotta Work, my second book, I talk about, I guide people through a step-by-step process to finding their purpose. And the essence behind that process is reconnecting with our joy, reconnecting with our happiness, and realizing that in every single moment in our life during which we did activities or interacted with people or were involved in stuff that created within us the essence of happiness and joy, we were already following our life purpose. Because whenever we're doing something that makes us happy, we are automatically following our life purpose. Therefore, there is a direct correlation between joy and happiness and what our life purpose is. Now, where can people can get tripped up is on the difference between pleasure and happiness. Pleasure is an ephemeral emotion that is experienced from something external, such as food, such as buying something, such as having sex, anything external that gives you something positive, that's ephemeral pleasure. Happiness or joy, on the other hand, I use the terms interchangeably, happiness and joy, it's an essence of who we really are. Happiness is not inside us, happiness is us. So you don't find happiness, you don't search for happiness, you don't discover happiness, you remember happiness. Yeah. So from my perspective, the spiritual journey and the journey to finding our purpose and following our purpose is by remembering and choosing happiness every single day.
And I remember, I think it was Deepak Chopra, I saw an interview fairly recently, and he talked about joy being that sense of happiness and joy for no reason. It has nothing attached to it. It just is.
It just is.
It just is. And I agree with you entirely, because purpose, again, you know, because it's been such a part of my life. When I lost my job, I used to be a radio presenter and I lost that job. For those that listen will know the story. But that was my dark night of the soul. And I came out of it going, well, what is my purpose? Because I figured that was what I was going to do. That was what I was here to do. So purpose is a big thing with me. And at the beginning of that journey, like so many people, I thought purpose was a thing. It was a job. It was a career. And it's not. It's a feeling. It's a feeling. And yes, that can be expressed in lots of different ways, as long as whatever that way is makes you feel whatever your purpose feeling is.
Yes, here's where I am.
It boils down, yeah.
Yes, I love this topic because, I mean, I love talking about purpose. My second book is all about that. So in the book, I talk about the four purposes of lightworkers. The first one is the collective lightworker purpose, which is to make the world a better place, in simple words. The second one is our soul realm purpose. Soul realms are groups of souls that share a common collective purpose, drawing from the collective lightworker purpose. So, for example, those who are of the elemental or starseed realms, they have a specific collective purpose. Then we have our soul purpose, which is a personal purpose fulfilled over several lifetimes. And therefore, you need 5 lifetimes to fulfill it. The first 2 lifetimes, you're finding, gathering information about it. The last 3 lifetimes, you're fulfilling it, for example. And then a life purpose is that specific mission, that specific step towards fulfilling the soul purpose. However, this makes us feel that our purpose is like very specific, very niched down. What I've realized is that, yes, it is, but at the same time, we have different mediums of fulfilling that purpose. And many people confuse the mediums with their purpose. Career, for example, a job that you have, that's a medium to fulfilling a purpose. And that's what I realized these past 2 years, actually, after writing my book, was that I have many mediums to expressing my purpose because I'm a very multi-passionate person. I like singing, I like acting, I like psychology, I studied geography, I did a master's in business management, I teach, like I do all this different stuff, which got me confused in the beginning throughout my life. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, what is my purpose? And now I'm realizing, you know what? These are the mediums through which I'm fulfilling a very specific purpose. So I think this reframe will help so many people realize that, you know what? My job helps me fulfill my purpose to some degree, and this hobby helps me fulfill my life purpose on a different level.
Oh, I love that, because I can so connect with that. I have so many different avenues that I like to share who I am and what I'm here to do. And I don't know if you find this, it might be slightly different because your business is very much centered on working with and your audience is very much spiritual based.
Yes.
Mine will be to some extent, but in actual fact, it's people who have been like me who are looking for support and help in themselves transforming. But I was very much like you, where I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that. And it made so much sense to me because the golden thread was always about helping people reconnect with the truth of who they are so that they can express themselves in whatever way that is. And I was always kind of, every time I spoke to various mentors, they were always like, you're doing too much. You need to narrow it in, you know, just talk about one thing. But it was confusing. And you know, certainly you'll have been the same as a kid, that you were just like, who am I? And it's
yes,
so long. And if anybody's listening that can resonate with this, you are all of these people at any one time. And the journey that you're going to have to go through is to recognize that you are all of these different people, all of these different heads. You know, I used to be the kind of sporty Vicky, then I'd be business Vicky, then I'd be fun Vicky, then I'd be quiet Vicky. You know, there was all these different hats that you had to wear. But the more you integrate with yourself and you integrate with your spirituality, you blend and become all of these people, in inverted commas, all of these characters, all at the same time.
Business. One of the business main business teachings is that you need to find your niche. Which is, I think it's important. Okay. Now, here's how this blends with integrating a multi-passionate personality. I believe that we can do it all, just not all at the same time. So yes, it's important to find your niche, which essentially is your life purpose. So you define it. And then once you define it and you know, this is my life purpose, then you start taking all the different aspects of yourself and you're essentially asking them, how can you help me serve this specific purpose that I'm here to be? So you're no longer scattering the energy you're putting into your multi passions, your many passions. You're niching each different passion to return back to the main purpose. And to give you a practical example, my purpose is to help lightworkers to find and follow and fulfill their life purpose. And I have different interests. I do pottery, I do singing, I do acting, I write books, and I also love business and psychology. So I'm using singing to teach lessons right now, and I'm releasing my YouTube videos and I'm teaching spiritual lessons through that. I'm acting when I go on stage, when I have to do video, everything that I do requires that part of me. Pottery, even that, I'm creating amulets, like ceramic amulets that I can use to create spells for people. Like, you can take everything that you do and return it back and focus it and connect it to your main purpose. This is how you stop feeling scattered and you feel on purpose while being multi-passionate.
I love that. I love that, because there's so many people who connect with that, because most people that are on a kind of light worker spiritual path, they don't just have one thing they're here to do. They feel the need, because it's creativity, isn't it?
Yes.
Expression and communication. And we feel we need to do that in so many different ways. When, and for anyone who's listening who would not really consider themselves a light worker, although you and I both know that we all are, but somebody who's just on a spiritual path, or maybe just at the beginning of their spiritual journey, but still feels that their life isn't fulfilling them, how could they try and verbalize or articulate the feelings that they have inside them, that they're just like, it's fine, everything's fine, but I'm just not quite, what am I supposed to be doing?
First thing I would recommend, now I'm going back to my third book, Protect Your Light, which is all about protecting your energy. Now I would recommend cleansing and shielding yourself, and here's why. So I define energy protection as the art of being energetically authentic. Now, this is a very key term here, energetically authentic, because as we go through life, apart from our physical presence, we have an energetic presence, our aura. So as we walk through life, both offline and online, we attract and we catch on different energetic attachments, different other people's feelings, other people's thoughts, different energies that just are scattered in the world energetically. We may not see them physically, but they're there energetically, in the same sense that the Wi-Fi is still here, but we can't see it. Like, those rays are there. Same thing with energetic attachments, toxic energetic attachments. So as we walk through life and we catch those, they interfere with the way we think, with the way we feel, with the way we behave. So unless our energy is cleared, then we cannot be authentic. We cannot know our life purpose, because we have other people's beliefs and other people's emotions interfering with our life purpose. So when we get into the habit of daily, in the same way that we put on clothes to go out when it's like cold outside, when we put on our energetic coats, when we cleanse our energy and shield our energy to protect our energy and choose what's ours and keep it away from what's theirs, because again, that's a different definition of what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours energetically. When we have those energetic boundaries, then we can be secure in our energy, and then our life purpose is revealed to us without going out and searching for it. So the whole aim is not to search for your life purpose, is to remember your life purpose. And remembering happens naturally. And there are many ways to go there. Yes, in lightworkers gotta work to have a step-by-step process, you can use that. But also, when you cleanse your energy naturally, you know what makes you happy, you know what lights you up, and therefore your life purpose just shows up.
That's such a brilliant tip, because often, sometimes that's a bit of a contradiction in terms, but the universe loves a contradiction, that you can feel a certain way and you're not sure why, and you can't recognize it in what's happening in your life. And I know, I mean, you have so many tools at your disposal and offer so many different services to people, which again, if anybody's listening, I'll put all links to George's website in show notes. But you talk about past life therapy, and what I found really interesting from your point of view is that you talk about our skills and our purpose, our inner past life, which now makes sense that you've talked about all the different purposes that we have.
Yes.
And it may well be that some of our journey, we're on this kind of five lifetime journey.
Yes.
How can we recognize and sort of tap into and access those skills from past lives to sort of allow them to support us in this life?
I love this question. So I use past life regression as a form of spiritual transformation. Many people just use it as spiritual entertainment. I don't. Meaning it's not just about, oh, let's see who I was. I'm all about, let's see what we can do with who you were. Let's see how we can resolve past life traumas that are creating limiting beliefs in this lifetime. Let's see if we can retrieve skills from past lives that you need in this lifetime. Let's see if we can find what your purpose was in that lifetime, which will inform what your purpose is in this lifetime. So when I do past life regressions, I guide people through that. So past life regression is one way to do so. Okay, when you work with a past life therapist, they can guide you. However, there are ways to learn about your past lives and retrieve skills from past lives without doing a past life regression. Because we bring clues of our past lives in our present lifetimes. These clues are in the songs, in the movies, in the TV series we like. They are in the type of clothes we like, in the types of furniture we choose. They are in the types of books and the genres that we read. They are even in the way we talk with people, in the way we express ourselves. They are in the countries and places we have irrational attraction towards, and they are in our hobbies. So by journaling about all these areas, we can find out so much about our past lives. For example, I have an irrational attraction to Spanish and the Spanish culture. And I've been learning Spanish for the past 10 years. I'm pretty fluent right now for no apparent reason other than I enjoy the language. But when I went to Spain, I decided to go deeper into it. I did a past life regression. I identified several past lifetimes where I was in Spain, significant past lives. So as a rule of thumb, actually, I would say that the place and the country we have an irrational attraction towards, we've had significant past lives in, and it's worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, I love that. Because I've always had a thing for Africa. And I love reading. And I don't have even a fraction of my books here. And I would suggest that, I mean, I love fiction, but I love historical fact wrapped up in a fiction novel so that I can learn, but be entertained and you know, taken away.
Yes.
And oh, I have so many books about stories of Africa, and I've always thought, I may have five.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure I must have been there.
And let me add something on that.
I also love massaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have no problem with people touching my body, and I'm just like, oh, I think it must have been Cleopatra in a former life. I'm just like, you can watch.
Here's the interesting thing. The concept of nostalgia also comes into play here. I'm currently doing my master's in psychology, and I'm studying nostalgia in space, in physical space. And what I'm discovering is that the places we feel, what is nostalgia? It comes from two Greek words, nostos, which means missing a place in time, and algos, which means pain. So it's pain because you're missing a temporal and spatial place in time. So many lightworkers, anyone who watches, let's say, for example, movies or reads a book, and they feel like, oh, I wish I lived there. Like for me, it was Harry Potter. I'm like, oh, I wish I was like in Hogwarts. Or I watch Outlander and I'm like, oh my God, I wish I lived there, like in Scotland. Or like, so if you notice while you're reading books or watching TV series, what you have nostalgia about, and it's irrational nostalgia because you know that physically in this lifetime you've never lived there, but yet you feel like you did. And you feel nostalgia, you feel like physical pain, well, not physical, but you feel like this sense of like missing something that you know was home but current isn't. then that's, again, another clue for a past life, a significant past life.
Mm-hmm. And that sense of belonging, because that's ultimately what so many of us are searching for, is a sense of belonging. Oftentimes we find that we search for that sense of belonging externally, but yes, really, in essence, it's certain places create a sense of feeling within us that's the belonging with inside us. And I'm laughing with you with Outlander. You know, I am a grown woman, but I remember when Outlander first came on, I felt seriously homesick watching the first series, like physical response to that series. And I had never read the books. This was the first, you know, I'd experienced it, you know, and I thought, at first I thought, well, that's just because you've got a crush on Jamie. But it wasn't, it was the whole time. It was the landscape. And obviously I'm Scottish. There's a very strong connection for me with Scotland, but I have a connection with Italy, with the Middle East, funnily enough, and certainly Africa, big time Africa. I love the fact that you are so logical and so, one would say, intelligent, as we would understand it to be, although we're all intelligent in different ways, but that sort of logical intelligence and on the science side of things, but also so open and so intuitive and so spiritual. How have you found juggling that, blending that? Was it a challenge, or did it just come naturally to you? Because there may well be people listening who think, well, you know, I've got to do this, and I've got to be this person, I've got to act this certain way because that's my job, I'm a mum, I'm a dad, I am whatever. How on earth am I going to integrate this side of me? How can I open up to this side of me when it's completely the opposite of how I have lived my life up until now?
So I recently had on my podcast Dr. David Hamilton, which you may know, he's also Scottish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his recent book is called Why Woo Woo Works.
Yeah.
So he shares evidence of why healing modalities and spirituality works from a scientific perspective. And what he said is that, George, there is a language miscommunication problem, because a lot of the things that we define in the spiritual community in a certain way are defined in a different way in the scientific community. So I'm starting here because from a long period of time, I've also had this need to try and understand how things work in the spiritual community. I'm a very logical person, but at the same time, I'm very open spiritually, like I'm woo-woo as fuck. But I always try to find out the logic behind this woo-woo-ness. For example, my belief in unicorns is not just, oh yeah, it's like unicorns. Like, okay, I wanted to learn, like, why do we believe in unicorns? Why, as human beings, we have such a strong connection with wanting unicorns to exist? So I studied them from a mythological perspective, and why so many cultures define unicorns, and I identified, like, the logic behind it, while at the same time understanding the spirituality. So I guess because many people starting right now on the spiritual path may feel this inner conflict of, do I have to let go of my logic to be spiritual? Just seeing someone who doesn't do that, I feel it's enough to encourage you to do it as well. And always feel okay about combining both sides of yourself. Because let's say you want to do this for a living, you can't just be and intuitive and expect that to work by itself. You need to have the logical skills to do marketing, to do business, to be able to organize things in courses, to write books in a very sequential way. So we need those skills. And you know what? I believe that all the jobs that we've had so far, the so-called jobs that were not in alignment with our life purpose, are in alignment with our life purpose, because they brought us to this point, and we can use those skills to be able to do the work that we do right now. For example, my corporate job was in Hay House, a spiritual publisher. So the actual job that I did was not spiritual, it was in sales. So it was like spreadsheets and managing stuff. But I use those skills right now when I run my spiritual business. So everything we learn is useful, and it's a medium to fulfilling our purpose.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's so true. And actually somebody said to me many years ago that you can actually still live your purpose by doing something in your job that you don't love, because your purpose actually is to serve someone. And you can do that if you're on a sales call and you're like, oh God, this is the 50th call, I'm waiting for my 51st. No, you can still give that person your energy so that they come off the phone feeling lifted by having had an encounter with you. And that's you living your purpose.
Yes.
And that really changed my mindset, because like you, I went from being a radio presenter and then I ran an arts and culture PR business. And those skills have now come into great benefit as an artist. And because whilst you paint, that's just such a small percentage of what you do. The rest of it is running a business. For people who want to pursue their purpose as a career, as a way of filling their cup up so that they can then fill more cups, as it were, but are finding that there's blockages and they aren't maybe, it's not happening quick enough for them, or
yes,
they're beginning to now question whether what they feel they were here to do is actually what they're here to do.
Hmm.
What do you have to share about that?
Hmm. So negative emotions, I mean, again, quote unquote negative emotions, are doorways to our traumas. They're triggers to our traumas. And I use the word trauma in a very, very generic way, because there are different layers of trauma. Some are like very traumatic experiences, some are multi-traumatic experiences. So by starting to be inquisitive, what I said earlier about our negative emotions, they can start revealing all the blocks that we have that prevents us from following our life purpose. From an energetic standpoint, and this is something that I teach in Protect Your Light, I guide people through a 7-step process to cleansing and securing their energy. One of the first steps of the process is identifying, and therefore scanning your energy field to identify all these blocks. And everyone can do this. Everyone has psychic abilities that we can use to scan our energy field. And the reason I start with the energy is because everything is created energetically before it's created as a thought, as an emotion, as something physical in our body. So all the limiting thoughts, the fears, the blockages that prevent us from doing this work for a living and following our purpose, they're all stored within our energy field. And by turning on our psychic vision and scanning our bodies, we can identify all of that. And I list all the main types of energetic attachments you can identify. There are karmic contracts and curses. There could be spiritual attachments. They could be cords, energetic cords and attachments you have to different people, to places, to limiting beliefs, to fears. They could be different psychic blocks and energetic mucus and etheric cobwebs within your energy field, representing different fears and negative emotions that are all stored there. So when we identify them, we can use energetic tools to remove them. Again, I teach that in the book, and then secure our energy field so we don't attract even more. And here's the magic with doing this work first, with starting with the energy work first. When you remove the energy of something that was part of you, it must come up to your conscious mind so you can release it physically as well. That's why the last part of the process is actualize the change. Many people believe that energy work is enough. It's not enough. Energy work is the beginning of healing. you heal, and then you go through the energy purge, we call it in the healing modalities, the healing crisis, when things come up, the whole, like, everything breaks down so you can build it, for you can see it and you can build it back up. So by doing the energy work first, by scanning, cleansing, and shielding your energy, and essentially reorganizing your energetic outlook and who you are energetically, then you're allowing all the limiting beliefs and the blocks to come to the surface so you can see them, you release them, and then you move on.
And do you feel that that's important to do that first before you start to move into the process of your business? Because every business has blocks. You don't always start a business and then everything flows, all the customers come to you, you're earning millions of pounds, because there's lessons along the way. How do you know the difference between this is a lesson here or actually this is not the right path? Because I think a lot of people that I speak to, they don't quite know the difference between actually see the kind of constant door shutting, that's because that's not the path, and there's another direction I need to take, or no, the constant door shutting because it's going to teach me patience, or there's something else. How do you know the difference?
When your energy is cleared, you know the difference because you know you are in alignment with who you really are. When your energy is not clear, that means you have energetic attachments of other people's thoughts, beliefs, and emotions, then those beliefs and emotions that are external to you are interfering with your intuition and your sense of knowing of whether this is the right decision for me or this isn't. So when we do the work of clearing our energy and our mind, because you can clear things in a physical way, in a mental way, in an emotional way, in an energetic way, I'm talking about the energetic aspect right now, but we can do it all. When we are clear and therefore aligned to who we really are, we no longer ask questions, we know answers.
And this takes you back to your book about you being your own guru.
Yes.
So many people, I mean, and I am guilty of this, even to this day, I'm guilty of it. If I'm feeling kind of blocked and what's the answer? The first thing I do is go and seek guidance from various different sources. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, find alignment. Find alignment. If you don't find the when you find alignment, the answer comes. Sometimes the answer is go speak to this person, go do that session, go do some yoga, go for a walk, attend this retreat. So when we shift our attention to, instead of searching for answers, to allowing the answers by coming into alignment with who we really are, then the answers come so much easier. And then the answers may include someone else, a third party, but they don't have to.
No, I love that. Because sometimes you do need a bit of additional support and energy.
Of course, we all do so.
And their wisdom. And sometimes we can just get stuck in our way. The one thing I wanted to ask you about, which I found really interesting when you spoke on your website about writing your first book, Be the Guru, you said that you reverse engineered your healing journey. Which just instantly my brain went, oh, that sounds really interesting. So I'd love you to explain what you mean by that.
Yes. So I'm a very logical person, as you realize. So the way I work is I reverse engineer whatever I want to do. So when I decided to write my first book, Be the Guru, that was a few years after I finished my my first hero's journey, after I empowered myself and I reached a point where I was like, you know what, I don't care what people think anymore. I love myself. I'm out of the closet. I'm like out and proud. I'm like, how do I take this information, what I now know, and help other people do the same? I'm like, okay, let me reverse engineer my journey. So basically, I took myself back to that first day that I made the decision to, you know what, I'm going to learn how to accept myself. And I started asking myself, what did I do next? And then what did I do? And then what did I do after that? So I realized, you know what, firstly, I started by accepting myself. So here's a chapter on acceptance. Then I started to meditate. Okay, here's a chapter on meditation. So I basically carved out the step-by-step path that led me to where I am right now. And that created the framework for my book. And this is essentially a main piece of advice that I teach, because I coach people to write and publish their spiritual books. And there's always a hero's journey. This is a concept created by Joseph Campbell. And it's a concept that you can see in every single, almost every single film or TV series or book. Let's say, so it goes like that. There is a hero who faces an obstacle, meets a guide who gives them a plan, and eventually they find the success, the solution. Let's apply that to Harry Potter. Here we have the Harry Potter, who's a hero, faces an obstacle, who is Voldemort wanting to kill him, meets a guide, Dumbledore, who gives him a path, destroy the Horcruxes, so you can find success and therefore kill Voldemort and be happy. So we can apply that. We all have a hero's journey. Every single person can apply this model to their own life. And it's also the model we can use to write books. And that's exactly what I do with every single book I have. What most people don't realize when it comes to writing spiritual books, when I ask people, why do you want to write a book? They're like, I want to tell my story. And this sounds harsh, but what I say is, nobody cares about your story. Unless you're Beyonce or Britney, nobody gives a fuck.
People care. Is a big wake up call.
I know. Because I had that wake up call myself when someone told me, like, nobody cares. I'm like, how dare you? People care about their story. Yeah. Your story is there to help them write their own hero's journey. So when you're writing a book, you're not the hero anymore. You were the hero. You are the guide. You're taking the role of the guide and creating a pathway to allow your hero, who is the reader, to find success, overcome their obstacle, and be there. So the way that I teach book writing is get to know your reader, who is the hero, identify what the obstacle is, what the solution is, which probably you know, you should know the pathway to getting them from point A to point B, and then guide them there through a step-by-step process that makes sense and is logical.
I love that. Because do you believe there's a book in everybody?
100%. But it's not your story.
If it is, then that's called a journal.
I mean, my story is in every single one of my book in a single chapter or two chapters, no more.
Yeah, that's a bit of a wake-up call. Moving swiftly on. I say that from my own book. Anyway. One thing I do want to touch on, because this is something that is kind of dear and close to my heart, is our psychic ability, because it's something, and I don't know whether this is just my experience, and I'm really interested to get your take on it. It still has a bit of a, not a kind of cool, it's not this really accepted sort of mainstream. It still is, it just, does that feel like that with you? It's still a wee bit,
Yes.
So even though you and I both know that we all are, because ultimately it's just a different word for energy, connection, whatever it is. If anybody wants to explore this part of themselves, why would they do it? What are the benefits? And is there any kind of tips that you could offer that people could maybe just start to play about with?
Yes. Oh my God. Why to do it? It's essential that you do it, because it's part of who you are. Because if you don't do it, you're not you. So let me break things down. So I have an online course that I teach. My signature course is called Intuition Mastery School, where I help intuitives and psychics, readers and healers to advance their skills. So you're already good, but you use oracle cards, for example, but you want to take it a step further where you don't use oracle cards. You just connect with someone and you channel and you connect. And when I was doing the research of creating the course, I was thinking of calling it Psychic School. But then, of course, the person that I am, I did my market research. I asked people, what do you like, the term psychic or the term intuitive? And almost 90% of people said they prefer intuitive, because there is sadly a negative connotation with the term psychic. So I call the program Intuition Mastery School instead of Psychic Mastery School. That being said, I still use the term psychic to define myself and to teach to people, because I want to change the connotation. Because why not? I don't like the negative connotation people have about that. And by avoiding it, you're not helping the whole situation. So I just use it and teach it in a way that's more agreeable with people and acceptable, and teach it the way it's supposed to be. So why is it essential? Because we're all born intuitive. We're all born intuitive. We have this third eye. We have this ability to receive guidance from source. We just block it as a result of people not teaching us how to do it, or people teaching us to consult other things other than our intuition. So being intuitive or psychic, it's basically coming back home. It's realizing that it's not just me in this separate body. It's me that's connected to the universe, that I have a spiritual presence, that I have spirit guides all around me, guiding me all the time. And it's not just me trying to figure out the answers, it's me receiving the answers and then applying the answers in the world. So if, call it what you want. If you don't like the term psychic, call it intuitive. If you don't like the term intuitive, call it I follow my inner guidance. Call it your gut feeling. Don't let terminology deter you from being you, or from doing work that you feel is passionate about. Call it what you want, just learn how to do it.
And if we wanted to start to explore that aspect of ours, our psychic ability, what's the kind of first couple of steps that somebody could take if they're interested in doing that?
Yes, first of all, I have a free guide that people will love. It's georgelizos.com/intuition starter kit. That's going to give you all my basic tools. But essentially, one of the tools that I want to share right now is trying to figure out what your main intuition type is. Because people receive intuitive guidance in different ways. Some people are visual, see things. Other people hear things. Other people know things. Other people sense things. The more rare ones is tasting things and smelling things. Okay, but most people fall within the first four categories. So how do you start practicing? Take yourself back to your last birthday. That's one thing that I want you to do. Or take yourself back to a graduation, a wedding, a big event in your life further back in the past. And try to remember it with as many details as possible. And then consider, did I remember mostly via thoughts, via emotions, via visions, or via sense of knowing? And when you do that, you realize, you know what, okay, I am more visual, or I am more like sensory, or I am more like a sense of knowing. It's like, we call it claircognizant, like spiritually. And then you get to trust your intuition more, because when an intuitive guidance comes through, you receive it through your main intuition channel. So when a vision comes up out of nowhere, you realize, oh, okay, wait a minute. I know that I'm clairvoyant, and therefore I'm visual in the way that I receive information intuitively. So this must be an intuitive thought. Then people ask me, how do we know it's not my imagination? How do I know it's not my ego? How do I know it's truly coming from source? Now, intuitive guidance that comes visually with thoughts, emotions, or sounds is usually spontaneous, so it comes instantly out of nowhere, so it's unexpected. Another characteristic, it comes first, and then immediately after, the ego comes into sabotage and tells you, oh, you've made that up. And also, it feels right. You don't have to ask other people's opinions about it. You don't have to wonder, ooh, was that my intuition or not? You've already done it. It's not certain. You've already followed it. So if you have these rules of thumb in mind, then it's easy to start receiving intuitive guidance and understanding how you receive them, so you can start developing that even further.
I love that. I love the going back to a memory. I have worked in this industry for 15 years and been to so many different courses, and I've never heard anyone describe it like that, to understand how you receive information, which is just fabulous. Thank you so much for all your wisdom. Clearly, you could be interviewed in podcasts for an entire series with the amount of information that you've got to share. But I'm very aware of your time and whatnot. So thank you again for sharing all your information. Like I said before, I'm going to put the link to George's website where you can download that free guide, and you can find out where to buy all your three books. So yeah, listen, have an amazing day. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. And if you'd like to connect with me, then head over to my website, vickipaul.com, or you can find me on Instagram at @VickyJPaul. Why not take advantage of a special subscriber-only 10% discount off my personalised soul portraits? All you need to do is get in touch using the promo code PODCAST21. That's PODCAST21. And don't forget, you can buy my book, How to Be Successful, available anywhere that you buy books, or you can also get it via the link in the show notes. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And please continue to share this podcast with anyone you think might find it useful. I'd also really love if you could write a review, because that helps myself and my guests get discovered by more kindred spirits. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.